had to do police, we had to discuss it now with almost all of the political parties of our country. I just wanted to say that because normally it doesn't happen that we say people should go out. But thank you very much, Chairperson, and everyone for your cooperation.
Thank you.
Let's proceed then. Let's go back to the civil union bills, actually. I've already outlined the process that was followed. We are now at the level of the A bill, which we have requested the voting department and the parliamentary committee. Can we then afford you parliamentary committee to make a presentation on the amendment?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, the document that was prepared for the committee speaks to the bill, so the members need to have the bill as it was introduced so that they can understand the A-list. The first clause, which is clause one, it's just a consequential amendment because now we're going to have two clauses on the bill. The bill as introduced, it only had one clause. So now we're just saying that after in the first line of the bill, which is after the heading that says repeal of Section 6 of Act 17 of 2006, after the bracket, we're going to just add herein after referred to as the Principal Act, so that we are able to refer to the Act as the Principal Act in the new clause that we are proposing to insert. Yes, Chair, the members need to have in front of them the bill is introduced and the document that was handed out, which is entitled Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs Civil Union Amendment Bill, B11 of 2018 Proposed Amendments.
And that's then, one page.
So that document speaks to the bill as introduced. So when we say, for instance, on page 2 in line 4, we are saying in page 2 in line 4 of the bill as introduced. If you look at the bill, members, as introduced, the bill has a long title which reads to amend the Civil Union Act, and then after that it has an enacting provision. It says it enacted by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows, and then we go to the next line which says repeal of Section 6. So if you read on the A list, which is the one pager, it says on page 2 in line 4 after 2006 to insert here and after referred to as the Principal Act. That is not a substantive provision, it's just a consequential.
I want you to guide members, and when you say line 4, they must be able to know which part of the Principal Act. Are we all fine?
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for being so fast. I'll try to be slow. Chair, as I'm saying, the bill is introduced. On the first line, it says bill, and then it has the long title that is written in bold. At the first two words, I'd say to amend. And then we go to the second line that says be it enacted by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows, that is line 1, and as follows is line 2. And then we have the words that say repeal of Section 6 of Act 17 of 2006, that is line 3. And then we have one that reads Section 6 of the Civil Union Act 2006, Act number 17 of 2006 is hereby repealed. What the A-list is proposing is that after the second 2006, that is in bracket, we insert said the words hereinafter referred to as the principal act. The only reason we are inserting that is because now we are proposing that we have a second clause. The bill as introduced only has two clauses, which is the repeal and then the short title and commencement. So we are inserting hereinafter referred to as the principal act so that when we speak of the act again, we refer to it as the principal act in the bill. We don't call it the civil union. That is just a drafting convention, Chair. It has got no impact on what we are proposing. What the policy change and an amendment that we are proposing to the committee is the new clause in the one-page document. We are proposing that there is a saving provision that deals with the exemption of the officials that are currently exempted in terms of Section 6 of the Civil Union Act. The saving provision would read as follows. Any exemption granted by the Minister in terms of Section 6 of the Principal Act immediately before this Act takes effect remains in force. So it goes back to the discussion that we had last week with the committee. And then there was an instruction that we go and draft this proposed amendment. And the effect of the proposed amendment is that the civil officials who are currently exempted in terms of the act will remain exempted. The rationale for that, I tried to explain last week that when the Constitutional Court normally makes orders on unconstitutionality of acts, it does not, if it's not going to benefit the people who are the applicants or complainants in a case, it does not apply the decision retrospectively. It applies it prospectively. So those people were given the rights in terms of the Civil Union Act, which was an act of Parliament. It was a lawful act of Parliament that says they can apply for exemption. So if Parliament wants to take that right away, my advice is that we don't do it retrospectively, but we do it prospectively. The department have got plans in place on how to cater for the concerns of other Home Affairs offices that do not have officials that are willing to marry same-sex couples. So, Chair, with your permission, if I can give over to the department to explain their plans. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry if I have to wait for the department, but perhaps maybe if I make a comment now, they would respond. When we met on the last occasion to discuss this, the view that I got, the legal advice that we got, was that you concurred that there is an element of discrimination where civil servants refuse to solemnize civil unions. And you say now that we should, those people who have that exemption should be left as is, and going forward, anybody new will not have the same right. The difficulty I have with that is that you're essentially saying that there are some civil servants will be allowed to discriminate against individuals, and others will not. That's effectively the consequence of what you're suggesting. I'm not sure that I would be comfortable with that. To me, just doesn't make sense. How is it that you can have some civil servants who are allowed to discriminate and others not? Surely that can't be constitutional.
I think, look, that's the point that Honorable Hussein is making. We're dealing with the totality of the state having to provide this service. And then once we ignite the bill, it means that it then supersedes, takes over from the current existence. I want to hear more about this constitutional argument that you're advancing, that it must not be retrospective, on the basis that those who are exempted will remain exempted. So it means that the problem still remains. that you're still going to find people who are discriminating. Because the fact that we're addressing something that is discriminatory in nature. So if you then allow your marriage officers who are exempted to proceed, you see there's no law, because we are repealing, in fact, the fact that you want to give this right to marriage officers to apply. And I think the point that Honorable Hussein is making is that it then does not make sense of addressing the issue that we thought we were addressing. You may want to talk to us more on that. I think, Dion, as you speak, you may then be talking to us on that. You can come back to me and then deal with this now, this constitutional matter now that they will remain exempted. What is it that you're addressing then? If this bill was meant to take away that particular right and then provide it to be the state right to provide that service, what does it mean? You can proceed, Dion, and then take us back. As you do that, respond again to the point made by members. But we are going to give you an opportunity again to speak.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start out by saying, remember Section 6 of the Civil Union Act was there. And in terms, well, it's currently still there, it's not repealed as yet. So there's a, and it's got to do with the balancing of rights now to a certain extent. There was a provision in the Act, the Section 6 that is currently there, that allowed officials to apply to the Minister for an exemption. That exemption was granted. And so those who have, there was certain officials that applied, others did not apply. So those that were applied were given the right and they were given the exemption. It said, what happens now is if you have, and this is where the retrospectivity issue comes into, if you're going to say going forward, we need to have officials everywhere, which is an administrative thing as well, to make sure that anybody that wants to conclude a same-sex marriage in terms of the Civil Union Act at a specific office must be accommodated. So on an administrative level, we have to make those specific provisions or arrangements to ensure that that happens. What you can't do is what you're going to maybe sit with at the end of the day, and this is where we're saying we're trying to balance is, officials, if this right is taken away and the application is with retrospective effect, those officials might bring an application to say, but you are now affecting rights that were given to me in terms of Section 6 of the Act that is currently in operation. So now you're on the other side of things. So what we say is, and a savings provision that we have is something that you use as a legislative tool to say, and it's very legitimate, you can use it. You say, in terms of the savings provision, everything that was done under this Act prior to the amendment of this Act remains in force. But going forward, you have to have people in place that will ensure that whatever you're trying to cure in terms of the legislation is cured. In other words, when people request to get married, etc., they must be assisted at that specific office. So going forward, what the department is looking at, when you do advertisements for people that need to be appointed as marriage officers, etc., that would be one of the criteria that you would place in your advertisements to make it very clear up front to say, when you are appointed as a marriage officer, these will be the tasks that you have to perform.
And almost 70% of our marriage officers, all of them, in fact, are discriminating against themselves. And we're now going to say you're going to create capacity and employ more people who are going to solemnize themselves. Does not make sense. How does it happen? If the state does not have money to employ more people, what's going to happen?
Chairperson, if I can just indicate, I want to hand over to Chairperson because we looked at the administrative side of things as well. I hear what Chairperson is saying. I take cognizance of that. I'm looking from a legal perspective.
Okay.
No, Chair, I don't understand because seemingly this explanation is telling us that the department was not implementing the legislation even per se, because we have got the problem. People who are complaining that they don't get the service as they deserve. Now they are saying they are going to do it, but what guarantee? And here we are talking about amendment of the Act. What does it mean to them, the amendment? Because the department, their role is to implement the Act that is being passed by this Parliament. They don't have to say, to think about themselves. how are they going to administer. If the legislation is passed, retrospective, it does happen to any legislation. The legislation that was passed, if there is an amendment, it supersedes whatever it is there. So I don't get it, what is happening. To me, it's just a waste of time. This exercise is a futile exercise if we are not going to tackle this matter. And currently we are having a problem. The department does not have enough, I mean the capacity in terms of human resources. Where are they going to get these people? For me, no, it's just uncalled for. If the parliament is failing to address this matter, it means we have to apply to parliament to get external legal services. Because seemingly, because the reason why I'm saying that, Chairperson, we discussed this matter extensively. I'm surprised if our legal unit is coming with this again, whereas we discussed it. But they are still coming back with the same issue that they discussed amongst themselves with the department. That is why to me I'm saying it's totally unacceptable, Chair.
All right. Now, Hossein, you can come in, then I'm going to give the come in. Let's engage. I mean, let's not try to close it. Let's debate the matter.
Chair, I just want to raise 2 points, please. The first one being, and I raised this last week, and we didn't get an answer, and maybe we'll get it now. I struggled to understand then, and I still struggle to understand now, how you could propose the repeal of Section 6, which in my view no longer exists if you repeal it. It's not there. And that in another part of the bill, you suggest any exemption granted by the Minister in terms of Section 6. So you're taking that power and that authority away, and then you're now granting it again somewhere else in a new clause. That's the first thing. The second thing is that when you were here last week, you explained and you quoted some other legal opinion or legal case about retrospective rights. In that instance, that opinion was not based on this specific case. It was, from what I understood, in relation to some other case before the courts. What I don't think we can do, and I haven't seen that case in particular, I don't know the details, what I'm not sure that we can do is to rely on that opinion in this particular case. Because I would prefer to be more comfortable to hear what the legal opinion, the constitutional opinion is. On balancing the rights of civil servants, granting them the authority to discriminate against individuals, and at the same time exercising their rights for religious or reasons, and balancing that with the right of individuals to be able to access government services without any discrimination. We don't have that opinion before us. And I would strongly advise, Chair, that we get an opinion on that basis. It just doesn't make sense to me that the Constitutional Court on the one hand says you cannot discriminate against individuals, but on the other hand it says people have a right to discriminate against individuals. That thing doesn't make sense in my head. So we need to get that kind of opinion on the basis of this particular bill before I think we proceed on it.
Okay, let's allow David to come in. You're going to come back. I have noted you deal with this issue of taking away this right and bringing it back again. The intention was to amend Section 6 so that the state cannot discriminate. The state remains government, and government remains government officials that represent the state. And now you want to say we'll take this right away, but we'll still remain, because you exempted in the previous Section 6, you exempted. So those who would be coming through after this enaction of this law will then have to be ready to be employed to solemnize same-sex marriage. Then the rest of, and which is your 70%, 75% of your marriage officers, all of them have applied for grounds of religion, whatever reasons that they've given. So it collapses the whole notion of discrimination. It means that the state will continue discriminating until you have employed people who are ready to scrutinize everybody. And what are we doing the law for? Let's hear you talk to us.
Thank you, Chair. I think we generally, and you can also look at our acts that we administer as Home Affairs currently. Whenever there's a previous law that is given a right, as you bring in new rights which affect the previous ones, you always indicate that your law would not apply retrospectively because there's a right that was granted and by a law of general application, which is why the savings provision is there. So an example, if you have got a, let's say the Immigration Act, you are granting permanent residence, but then when you create a new law, you then remove permanent residence. You're going to have to save the provision that says anyone who had got permanent residence due to the in terms of the previous law, they remain having that right. So that's basically the closest example that I can give. So what we can still get an opinion. I think that's something that could be done. It's, I think the parliamentary legal advisor will facilitate the process. But on the practical side, what I wanted to indicate is I personally was there doing training on to officials regarding civil union matters, where we were saying long before, not now, anticipated, don't remember the exact month, but it would have been earlier this year, where we went to all the provinces and we're training people on civil union specifically to get the mindset correct and indicating what are the things that they need to do and just to get more numbers. I've got a list here.
And we then emphasize the point that exactly. So that you emphasize the point that no, in fact there's a provision if you don't want, just say you don't want.
I want
to understand.
No, I'm trying to explain, Chair, maybe.
Why?
Because the emphasis that we're doing there and even the circular that went out to get officials was specifically to say this is for people, we are training specifically for civil union. And we had done the training, I was there myself with the trainers, and what we had done is they wrote the test thereafter, just to test the competence. And I've got a list of the people that we had trained in all the provinces, and those that passed the test and those that were not yet competent, then we had to retrain them. Because for you to be able to solemnize any marriage or civil union, you need to follow certain, you need to test your level of competence. And the officer, let me give an example. In KZN, we trained 25 officials. And out of the 25, it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, about 8 who were not yet competent. So we went to Mpumalanga, we trained 9, 3 were not competent. Northwest, 14, and then there were 4, 5 not competent. So we've done quite a lot. Gauteng had then the biggest number of 31 with about 6 who were not competent. So there's work that we're trying to do to get more. The chairperson mentioned that we might not be able to fill positions, which is true because as of now we're not filling positions. But then these are some of the offers that we've been making. So the process from the births, marriages and deaths section will then unfold in terms of granting the designations specifically for civil union. And the other old, arrangements, like it was explained last week, before you enter into a marriage, generally, you go and make an appointment, whether it's customary civil union or civil marriage under the Marriage Act, you go and make an appointment. We check whether you're not married, we check the lawful impediments if they're not there. Then we make an appointment and it will be a week's time or so. We agree on a date, and where there is an official who is not there to solemnize, there should be an official that we are going to designate.
With the implementation now. I want us to deal with the principles here the state may not unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against anyone. That is the line that is in the Constitution. And that anyone is being good.
And then
the issue that I think again we still need to dig deeper
mean, I just want us to understand the state part of it first. We went through the civil union with a massive, you know it, opposition. But because we're guided by the Constitution, Constitution even supersedes all of those that were arguing on the basis of a Bible, on the basis of religion, culture, and all of that, that the Constitution is the supreme law. We are officials in the department who represent the state, in fact now the state, says that, I'm not even sure what argument the military officers have advanced for them to apply for this a indemnity, not through Solomon. I'm not sure. That is it based on what? On religion, on culture, on what? What is it that makes 75% of marriage officers in the Department of Home Affairs say, no, then I cannot do it? What is it? Yeah. Or is it because we're trying, in the engagement of the lawmaking process then, because we cannot divorce that process and where we are today. Was it because we're taking pressure from the officials of government who are saying that, you know, we're not ready to solemnize such marriages, when we have dealt with the public there, and the public had to accept that in reality the Constitution is a supreme law, and officials of the department then say, it's now official, the implementer is now the law, says because of my religion or a cultural belief, I will not be able to do such. So we granted them in Section 6. Maybe it's by mistake that we granted that right of Section 6 from the start of, or maybe it was to try and accommodate. Now the reality is here now. And this is what the reality that members are trying to advance and understand. Once you amend Section 6, we amend it. This main issue is meant to amend Section 6 of the Civil Union. Because the reason you may just leave it as it is then, in simple things that go and employ more civil servants who will be marriage officers who can then solemnize same-sex marriages. Just leave it as it is, because it's clear that it does not distract. You know. The point that I think we're trying to overcome and understand is this rather now advancement of saying that these rights will then remain, meaning that those who are exempted will continue exempted. And then you then work on getting new people who will then, and they can come back to now. Even realize that my religion and what, even that signing may not hold water in the court of law. That signing may not hold water. You see, the person now says that my religion does not allow me to do this thing anymore. And whenever you've employed that person there, and you're not going to terminate the same condition that you are not so nice. So then we can come back again, just talk to us on, because it's still that advance the point of talking of the point that says that once we ignite the law, and you make an example of the permanent residence, these are two different things. Mm-hmm. The fundamental rights that we have limited here is not the administrative right, it's a fundamental right. You may not even want to convey it with the permanent resident. So let's hear you. Now let's allow the engagement. I think
thank you, Chair.
The marriage officer may solemnize the civil union in according with the provision of this act. Clause 4, I'm just on clause 4, 1A. I'm just giving an example. It has not been struck, it does not say may, must. It says May. That's close for now. After. You can proceed then.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, Section 6 of the Civil Union is unconstitutional. I was here last week doing a presentation for the committee so that we can retain the Section 6. Because there were submissions that were made that if we take away Section 6, then the people who hold an opinion that these people should not be married because of their religion, it is unconstitutional for them to do that because we have Section 9 of the Constitution. However, what I want to remind the members is the Constitution was passed in 1996. In 2006, an Act of Parliament was passed that says marriage officers who want to be exempted can be exempted. It was an Act of Parliament. When that Section 6 of the Civil Union was placed in the Act, the Constitution was there. Section 9 was there to say that no one should be discriminated on the grounds of sexual orientation and all those things. Despite that, the Act was passed. These officials didn't just take the rights. It is going to be different if these officials were never given the right in the first place. The problem is that an Act of Parliament that was passed by the Parliament under this Constitution gave these people a right to be exempted. Now, if Parliament wants to take away that right, which I agree that Parliament should take away that right, then we should save the rights that we have given to the people under an Act of Parliament. The Civil Union Act is not an it was an Act of Parliament. It is a legal document. The people were exempted in terms of an Act of Parliament. So if now Parliament is saying we want to take away the right, then fine, let's take away that right going forward. I gave an example of how the Constitutional Court applies retrospectivity. I would like to quote to the members section 172 of the Constitution. It deals with the powers of the courts in constitutional matters. I understand that we are not a court, but my advice is based on the Constitution and how the courts have applied retrospectivities in matters that are before the court. There is no constitutional court case that deals exactly with this case. I just quoted previous cases of how the court have dealt with this. Section 172 says, when deciding a constitutional matter within its powers, 172(1) of the Constitution. When deciding a constitutional matter within its powers, a court must declare that any law or conduct that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid to the extent of inconsistency. And...
Now, this matter has not been taken to court now. This matter is brought forward by Parliament. This is a bill of Parliament. If this matter were to be taken to court now, what will be the finding of the court? They are not going to find this section.
They will find it unconstitutional, Chair, which is what was my advice to the committee once, that Section 6 is unconstitutional. Hence, we need to repeal it. But, Chair, the rights were given to people in terms of an Act of Parliament.
Okay. Okay. No. Just proceed now. Just know your issues. It's an engagement. You sign to make a breakthrough for an event. That's what we do as lawmakers. Be patient. You put the point across. We are now being guided on the basis of this right that was given by this Parliament, which we are now saying that this right must be taken away. And they are now trying to show us the gaps there, that if you take these rights away, you may be infringing on the rights of those that you have given the rights before. But moving forward, this one may then apply. Until they get all those ones, when you shift them out of the system somehow. I don't know, but this is engagement. I think we're proceeding.
Okay, Chair. Chair, I was still reading Section 172. Mm-hmm. In Section 172(1)(b) says, the Constitutional Court may make an order that is just and equitable, including an order limiting the retrospective effect of the declaration of invalidity, and an order suspending the declaration of invalidity for any period and on any condition to allow the competent authority to correct the defect. It is on this basis that the Court makes the orders, especially in respect of retrospectivity. Chair, I'd like to give a committee an example of a bill that we're doing in transport. Now, the Department of Transport wants to do away with the RAF system, the Road Accident Fund. They're introducing a bill that says, that is called Road Accident Benefit Scheme. It's called a RAPS bill. Chair, in that bill, what Parliament wants to do is to take away the right of person who is involved in an accident to sue the state and claim from the RAX, and people walk away with like millions of rands because the state is bankrupt and the state cannot pay those claims anymore. What the department has proposed is that there is a scheme. The scheme is going to operate like this. If you're involved in an accident, you're going to be paid a certain amount of money, irrespective of how much you earn and how much damage you suffered and all those kind of things. But in the bill, there is a savings provision that saves the claims that arose during the dispensation of the Road Accident Act. People were involved in an accident while the Road Accident Act is in operation. They cannot; those rights cannot be taken away. Their claims will still be paid in terms of the Road Accident Benefit, Road Accident Fund Act, because the rights are rose.
But those people are not saving money. Those people are
paying. Okay, I'm just trying to make a point of
this. The state.
Chair, they are the state, but the principle that I'm trying to show the committee. No, they are not the state, Chair. But Chair, the rights are given by the state. Our Road Accident Fund is owned by the state, and the Road Accident Benefit Scheme will be owned by the state. And it will still be the people. The beneficiaries are the people who are citizens of this of this country. They are public members of the public chain. Yes. The principle is that you can, in a legislation, save or have transitional provision moving from the current position to the next position. And I cannot stress the point enough, Chair, that these rights were given by an Act of Parliament.
I understand. You have made the point.
Thank you.
I think you have made the point. But the issue here that comes in is that, and you're saying that you're using the word that says, if these officers can take us to court, we'll not do it. Now, you're using a thread of, this is what they're doing. You're telling me that these immigration officers can take us to court. Let them take us to court then. Why they cannot take us to court? Let them take us to court. Then let them win on the basis of a court now going back to 71. But nonetheless, let me not rise to come to that conclusion. Let me allow Chacha. I'm going to allow you to speak because you are the sponsor, but this is a bit of the committee now. Let me allow you to speak. But I think the point is made is that we have given this right as Parliament from the start. We're now amending the Act. We're taking away that right. And the issue that when you're taking away this right means that you're going to be discriminating against those that you have given the right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying. Katya?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just think importantly to say that two wrongs doesn't make a right. The Constitution, Section 2 of the Constitution is very clear that the Constitution is, the supremacy of the Constitution is in Section 2. I also, just for examples that has been made, we cannot look at an example and talk about, for example, members of the public, because it's not the same. Here we're talking about 400 state employees compared to 8 to 11% of our population. There is no, as we heard in the presentation last week, there is no discrimination. You cannot discriminate in any of our acts and laws. There's no way that you are allowed to discriminate. Why can you only discriminate against same-sex marriages? But I think one other thing is a groundbreaking ruling that was made, and it's actually in the front of our Constitution, and it's the groundbreaking judgment. 3, which was Christian Education South Africa versus the Minister of Education. Maybe look at that ruling as well, because there the court found that believers cannot claim an automatic right to be exempted by their beliefs from the laws of the land. So I think that is also quite a, you can't use your beliefs, whether it is whatever belief, and go against the laws of the land. Then I think that I've said this so many times, Chapter 10 of our Constitution is extremely clear that services must be provided impartially, fairly, equitably, and without bias. This is, there's not a problem if we're looking at a phasing in stage of saying 12 months or 16 months, but it's the problem if we're going to allow 400 people to discriminate for as long as they're in the employ. So now we're talking they might be 30 years old. For the next 30 years, they're allowed to discriminate. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that's fine. I think the point from the committee side made, but from the legal side, the argument is that there's a law that has given this right to the immigration of citizens. Through Section 6. Now you want to take away those. So, and we are saying that leave this area that we have given the rights of these officers, but moving forward, this is what we then suggest we should do. So they remain there. They remain there with the right that we have given them, that we have amended that right. They don't have it anymore. That right is still there. You're saying they're still holding it. Because they were given the right to discriminate using religion or whatever. And we're now saying again, it's unconstitutional, in fact. But this is a state they're talking about. I understand either what we have done when we're doing the civil union on Section 6 to deal with the issue of this feeling and religious cultures of these officers of the state. That we're protecting them from not to solemnize same-sex marriage. But the reality then comes back. The reality is that the state cannot discriminate. And then we want to talk administration now. This is how we're going to administer it. We'll get this officer there. We'll put this one there and all of that. How do we navigate the two so that we can then sort of, because I hear other colleagues still want to say, let's bring forward those judgments that you want to base your argument on. Maybe look at those judgments. But how do we navigate ourselves from this point? The point it's made did not come through a court challenge. If it had came through a court challenge, this was definitely going to be found unconstitutional. And the court will have given Parliament a 6 months or whatever to correct. So it's Parliament that is being proactive here. And Parliament says that, but you cannot be given these rights. Those rights must be taken away because they were given unconstitutional rights by the law that will be found unconstitutional if that will be taken to court for that test. So why do you want to keep something that you have given that you know very well that it does not suit the constitutional master, and you want to defend it now? Dion.
Chairperson, can I just say the following? We're not trying to defend anything. We are implementers of the law, and we see what happens on ground level, and when we draft our laws, saving provisions, etc., ours is to come and advise the committee as to what could happen, the possibilities that do exist. If we do not put this information before the committee, because that would enable the committee to make an informed decision at the end of the day, that informed decision is based on everything that is placed before the committee. So that is us as bureaucrats. We have to do that and place it. I'm not saying, Chair, and as you indicated, we will be. I'm not saying that there will be litigation. There could be litigation. That's why I choose my words very. There could be litigation. But the committee needs to be aware of that, that there could be litigation, because a right was granted in terms of Section 6, which is still currently there, and it was under law of general application, etc. I understand where the committee is coming from to say, well, it was done that point at that period in time. Should it have been done? It's water under the bridge. The fact is it has been done. How do we correct it? Now, how do you move forward in a seamless manner? And this is what we're trying to do and advise on as bureaucrats to place all the possible pitfalls, and I choose my words very carefully, that could be there, that could be faced later. There could be litigation, but I'm not saying they will.
So we're accommodating your colleagues generally. This is what we are doing here. Now, is to accommodate the officials of the Home Affairs that you are accommodated. You know, if we amend this Section 6, it means that right is gone.
Chair, that's what
the state must now. That must is going to come in. the marriage officer must marry the same sex people.
Indeed, Chair. If you have a situation, remember Section 6, where we're repealing that, so going, it won't be there. And I'm not here on behalf of the officials of the department,
the
Chair. I want to make sure
that. Why do you still want that to happen?
I'm here on the legal aspects.
Huh?
I'm here on the legal aspects. So from where I see it, from my point of view. So what I'm saying is.
So Parliament Legal Services agrees with this point. From the department. I have the college in
They can
answer.
We had our meetings at 7.
Parliament, you are guiding us. I am at the level of Parliament. You look at the interests of your members here. Obviously, you'll alert us if you cross the line, you'll alert us that here are the issues here. You're not going to buy into the department point of view, generally, and want to agree with the department to that extent that it's going to, because there's definitely, John, anyone can wake up in the morning and take this matter to court. What we are now trying to navigate on is this right that we have given. That's what we are trying to navigate on. And this is informed by the state having now to provide that service, because currently the state is not providing that service, because not providing it. Those people are meant to go wait there, they are meant to drive kilometers, go to Port Elizabeth, because here in King Williamstown we don't have a marriage officer who can solemnize such marriages, and therefore, so the state, anyone that goes and presents themselves at Home Affairs will find some kind of a administrative discrimination in the process, because you don't get that service at the boys, you expected it. This is what we are trying to navigate and resolve, right? Now the issue of that right, and this is what Honorable Hossein was putting, you are amending this Section 6, you now put, it becomes a must now, right? And we are still having this right of marriage officers. The point I was asking again, what has been advanced so much that marriage officers in their numbers, were given this permission not to solemnize such marriage. What has been, I mean, maybe for example, we have not even spent time to look at what were the fears or the issues that they don't agree with. Have we spent time and look at those issues when they applied to the minister? What was the argument? What was the argument, President, of the immigration officers, I mean, marriage officers of the department, when in their numbers, in fact, the entire department, to be very honest with you, this is what it has happened here. It's religion-based.
Chair, I think we, like we're saying, when we had public hearings, and I remember the first public hearing in Soweto where you had said, Chair, I need to interpret from English to Sotho. There were objections that were raised. We went throughout the provinces. And in making a consideration, there were two elements that we looked at. And I think if I recall the judgment in Fori as well, had then said when it comes to marriage officers who are religious, the priest, let me just say in simple, there are already some more covered. If you look at the civilian, what we had done then was, because there are objections within the religious denomination or churches, let me put it in general, then we are not going to come.
But is that constitutional, in fact?
I'm trying to give the background, Chair, of what
and the constitution, happening. Then we talk the Bible, and the constitution, now you're going to cross the line.
If Chair allows me, because Chair was asking what had happened that we come to this position. So I was trying to give background of what were the debate at that point, which led to this provision perhaps being there. And Chair was saying, did we look at it properly? So I'm trying to give the context. So there were two approaches. Firstly was to say, when marriage officers who are priests or religious of religious background, we are going to make a provision which says, if the particular denomination doesn't allow or has an objection, we are not going to say to a religious, it's a must. But when it came to officials, we then said we are going to take marriage officers who are currently designated. But then, because there are objections that we are looking into in terms of religion, the belief, conscience and religion, I think the three, then there's going to be a provision that will allow officials who might object. So it was based on the public...
But the state cannot discriminate on the basis of... That's the state now, not dealing with a marriage officer who employed himself there, who he has given the permission as home affairs. You're now dealing with the state. But now we're dealing with the, now let's look at the issue of religion, culture and what,
yeah,
from the level of the state. Now here's the state. The state is all of you who are state officials, who implement the law. And we are now saying that my religion does not allow me to solemnize such marriage because my church says something about this thing. Yeah.
Like we're saying, these were the issues that were considered at that point as we're having debates within Parliament. But then, unfortunately, maybe even the implementation thereof as a department would have administratively not looked or taken enough measures to make sure that the discrimination is not happening. And like I'm saying, we have then went back when we got complaints and tried to come up with measures. Unfortunately, I'll say it was late, that the discrimination continues and it's not good at all. But what we've been raising with the parliamentary legal advisor say is a principle that we're looking at. And like I was saying, Chair, if there is a possible way to go back and relook at the judgments around the principle of retrospectivity, perhaps let's go through that if the committee is not fully convinced.
I think it goes back to, let me give you a saying, and I think that's what I was saying, that maybe the option may be just exhaust the process, rather than dealing with the fear that is maybe taken to court. Let's deal with what is reasonable and fair for everyone, even if you are state officials that use their culture and religion. In the Eastern Cape, we're told most of culture. Just like that. Therefore, you discriminate. Come on. And yes. That's why I said, give us reasons, especially these officers, what was their reason that they advanced when they applied? But then I want us to deal with the way forward. And I think, look, the points are made. We have noted this point we made. Then let me give consent before I try to attempt even to close it to another, you know, way forward that we need to get. It's a very exciting process, and I think it will be good for Parliament, the legal services, and our research here to really try and extract and bring more information so that by the time we deal with, we are now dealing with the right of the immigration officer. This is what we are trying to deal with now. And we must find a way of how do we navigate out of that, right? Because the point that the committee is making is that when you amend Section 6, that right must fall, so that the state can then provide that service. This is what the view that I'm getting from the committee. So that you don't take away that right and then bring it back again on the basis that they were given before under Section 6, and therefore they will remain there even when Section 6 is being amended. Okay, Hossein, you can come in so that we deal with the...
If I can gauge the views of us as a committee, it would appear then that this suggestion of the new clause is I wouldn't support it. I'm not sure that there's going to be a view to support it. But I want to say, Chair, that perhaps maybe what Dion is saying is something that we must take seriously. If he's saying that there is the possibility of a legal challenge, and we shouldn't dismiss that. But what we shouldn't do is also accept that or assume that the legal challenge is going to succeed, which is why I want to suggest, Chair, that the department come back to us with the prospects of success on that challenge if it's likely to happen, so that we are not accused of acting irresponsibly. My suspicions is that the prospects of success of the civil servants I suspect that they would not succeed. My reasoning for that is simply this. If it were true that they be allowed to discriminate against people on the basis of religion or whatever, remember prior to 1996, there are many civil servants in South Africa who were also allowed to discriminate against South Africans. Police officers, good example. And if that argument is so true, today they will still be allowed to discriminate against individuals because of their rights that were granted to them. It's for that reason I'm saying that I find it highly unlikely that the Constitutional Court, but I'm not a constitutional expert, they must get that view for us so that we know we can make an informed decision. But Chair, before you close on this bill, I know that we as a committee can deal with other aspects of the bill, given that you've got an amendment before you. And with your indulgence, I want to ask for another matter to be dealt with, and possibly the department can come back to us. And if I can ask you, Chair, to just go to the Principal Act, Section 8.1 of the Civil Union Act.
That's the one.
And Chair, this Civil Union Act, I see many of the principles that are included in here actually flow from the Marriage Act. And the Marriage Act itself is, 1961? Okay? It's quite an old act. The reality is, Chairperson, in our own society, is that we know that there are many people in South Africa for religious and cultural reasons who have more than one spouse. But the old law that we have only allows them in law to have one. And the practical reason, the practical consequence of that is there are literally thousands of women out there who get discriminated against because of that one law. Because their husbands can hold only one wife legally and two or three other wives through customary laws. And I would really appeal, Chair, that if we do get the opportunity, that we'll be able to deal with that on the next occasion, and perhaps maybe the department can give us an opinion on that as well. Because this law does not actually satisfy the current circumstances that we live under in society, and we know it very well. It can't be right, and that doesn't sound correct to me. But I don't want to open up that debate now, because that's another long debate.
I think part of, legislation evolves, we are going to get a lot of issues that we still want to correct in between. Just don't forget that the Mena Initiative was dealt with when we started the process. That time the court has put an act next to Parliament that within 3 months, if you don't do the following, the court will read into the Marriage Act. And it made us run quickly as possible just to accommodate this part. Hence, Honorable Carter and others are now slowly bringing in this amendment. What is important will be for us to make sure that these amendments that we are bringing forward are not going to be further discriminating on anyone, by the way. But we at the same time look at the Constitution as the supreme, guide into this engagement. The point that we are making is that let the department, together with legal services, go and look into this issue of this rights of civil servants that you have given and taking them away. I think it's very important and it's very fair. We can then refer to a number of judgments that we have, come across, and then come back and guide the committee to navigate this line then, But you can hear the point of the committee is that once you amend Section 6, those rights must just fall because we expect the state now. So this is informed by the state government to provide that service, right? And I'm not sure, again, at what level, again, that we have government officials that have certain rights other than the marriage officers. Which other legislation that gives a government official to use his college house religious not to provide a service? If there's any, just give me any. if there's any, just give us and said in this department here, social development, the officer responsible for dishing out food parcels cannot give food parcels because he believes that food is free, everybody can just get food there. So therefore in my religion the food parcels, food must just be available anyway. I'm just trying to throw in something that you can bring forward and say, here the law does give an officer of the state to use his religious or culture to discriminate against another. Give us that. That's the homework that you must go and do. There's none. He said, no, come back if there is none. Come back and fix it. And it's only at this level. But the point again is that these people are not marrying you as a state officer. They're not marrying you. They're not with you. They just want you to fill in the form and say, Joe and Sam are now married, the husband and their partners. It's a partnership. It's not husband and wife. It does not say, it's what you call a heterosexual marriage act. It's something else about partnership. So if these people decide to have their partnership and the state says, no, you can't be partners here. What do you want to know about what they do when they're there? That's none of your business, generally, and they're not marrying you, right? They don't say, well, then you're going to be part of us just from today. Therefore, my religion does not allow me to be part of you. They want the state to fill up the form and to confirm that this partnership exists. That's the role of the state. Okay? So just go and work on these things. Both the parliament once you are ready, you can just keep in touch in between. And I know that Qatar, we're not just going to rush and say we're now passing this thing as the committee. We have time, and I think we still have the whole month of somewhere the 10th of December. But we still have 12 months end, so we can still give you a week to go back and look at any case study that you may want to share with us, and then come back to the committee next week. And then we can then read again. The only thing that we must do is just amend. And everything, that's what we're going to do.
Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt you. May I just ask, please, so that we don't lose the thread, that if they can also just come back to us with the details on 8.1, as I spoke.
8.1 and 4.1a, because we're only amending 6 there. I'm not sure what does it do with marriage officers, may solemnize. Are we going to amend that part? May or must now move forward. You'll guide us in that, right? Shall. Okay.
Shall.
No, it's fine. Don't make you see now. You are now detecting what's not coming. They will guide us on that point. I'm closing this matter now.
I wanted to look at the issue of determination of segments. But as I am out, we sit down and call money. But at the end of the day,
the state now provides. The determination of pregnancy again. Okay, that's fine. Okay. Nanaya Wusa, that's fine. Let me give you the wrap up. I'm closing this matter, members. Mamu, you still want to open? Always when the chair goes
to open. Not to open.
Okay, so talk, Mamu.
Just to close.
Thank you, Chairperson. Not to open, Chair. Chair, I just wanted to raise a matter which I raised last week,
yeah.
And that was a matter of the time frame, exactly when will the whole matter be resolved so that it's implemented by a specific time. I even spoke of 6 months, a year and all that. I would like the department and our legal team, as they have their discussion, to actually look at all the challenges which Chairperson we have been bringing forth, and then bring in time so that we get an understanding of exactly when can the whole matter go forth and be implemented. Thanks.
The only time is, Mama, once Parliament adopts this amendment, and then it then go to the President to send. Once that is done, the honor is on the department to implement. The point that I think Philomena was trying to put in place was that they've now looked at all of these hindrances that they've identified, and they believe that by the way which they will then intervene. But Bona is based on still using that issue of immigration officers exempted, the committee says no, that matter must fall, right? It must fall so that the state provides that service. Because it's got nothing to do with your religion, your culture. You, as an employee of the state, must provide that service. This is what we are saying as a committee for now. So come back and convince us otherwise that we are not able to do it because we'll be taken to court or we'll be infringing on the rights of employee of the state. And we then said, again, look at any other case that you'll find anywhere that got to do with the rights of the state official not being able to provide the same, discriminate on the basis of his religion or culture. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I am in agreement with the committee. I am in agreement with the members. I am actually the one who came last week and convinced you that Section 6 of the Civil Unions Act is unconstitutional. I am saying it's unconstitutional. No state employee should have the right to refuse to marry someone because of their religion, because their right that is guaranteed in Section 15 is not an absolute right. It's a right that can be limited. So, and the principle of reasonable accommodation, I discussed all those things last week with the committee. What I'm asking the committee to look at is, I am here to protect the committee. I'm here to manage the legal risks that could arise. So I'm advising the committee that if we do not look into this savings provisions, we are facing the risk of being challenged by the officials. So that is of the department that has been given a right by an act of parliament. It's just an advice, Chair. If the committee does not want to take it, the committee can tell me, no, we don't want the savings provision. We are going to pass the act as it is in front of us. And that's fine.
No, look at it. You have been taking the committee. I think
the committee is very happy of the work that you're doing. In fact, even to alert the committee of the danger, I think you're correct. The point that you have raised is a very important point, and we're not just not going to our position was that once we have amended that, we took it that those rights are gone, and you brought this before. We say go and do further engagement on that, on the basis of looking at this official now in the state, because before you have given them that right on the basis of trying to address their fears and address the culture and religion of government. But now it's government that must provide that service, and government cannot be seen discriminating, right? So you're trying to come up with other means to say the rest of the immigration officers that we're going to employ are going to be, you know, this is what
marriage
we are saying.
Officers.
No.
Marriage officers.
The marriage officers employed by the state. You see, those ones who are private outside there, which you give permission, they apply to you to be immigration, to be marriage officers. Those ones, I understand them. They can either refuse it as individual houses. But from the state point of view, that's the challenge that we have to deal with. Right? So let's go back and navigate that. And then we'll get a guide. I mean, we've got very good legal brains here. So get us, and members, I think the manner in which you've raised your issues very sharply and your standpoint, I think it's taken into account. There's nothing, no hard feeling. It's a lawmaking process that we have to engage ourselves in. And it's a healthy thing that you're doing, by the way, this committee, to go through this exercise. Okay? It's better now. Imagine those years when we were doing the Civil Union. You know, I will still tell you about that pastor that says that fire will come and burn us once we pass the Civil Union. And that fire has not come just today.
Chief, just on a light note, I still remember when we went to the Northern Cape.
Yeah.
I was standing on the stage and you said to me, you must translate this thing into Afrikaans now. And there was no Afrikaans translation. So, yeah, you put me on the spot there as well, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. On that note, let's get the Taisi Nabo. We are proceeding with the amendment as they are proposed. Thank you very much, Dion. You are remaining in our CDIC. Okay, legal services at the level of the Civil Union. Thank you very much, ma'am. We really appreciate the guide. And then please don't make anything introduced. We appreciate the guide. Thank you very much. Okay, can we come in front then, leaders? IEC, who's leading on the IEC legal services?
Okay, just
Mam Jeanette, that's fine, Commissioner. I know that. Come here, Commissioner. We're starting with the process of the IEC now.
Mama Poo. Let's proceed with the amendment that they are proposed. Who's leading us?
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm with I'm with Commissioner Love and who's the Vice Chairperson of the Commission, and Ms. Rekaras. Chair, she's a Senior Manager for Legal Services. My apologies. And my name is Sai Mamabu. Yes. Chair, at the moment, the indication we received is that there's not been any submission from members of the public. Therefore, there is, at this stage at least, nothing that we need to respond to. Secondly, Chair, there's the issue of the additional clause that we had referenced when we were invited by the committee about 3 weeks ago, relative to voters for whom we do not have addresses in relation to the local government municipal electoral act. There's a draft that our colleagues in Home Affairs have prepared, and I think the Commission wishes that all the necessary be done to ensure that it is part of the eventual bill that is passed by the committee. I think really, Chair, unless there are other specific questions that the committee wishes us to address, that's our say.
Let's talk about these amendments first. And earlier there has been a debate about the procedure of bringing further amendments. The purpose for public comments and public hearing is meant to allow people to come in advance their point and bring further amendments. It's not meant for that. Why do we go for public hearings and invite the public to comment? Because we want to take into account the issues that are raised by the public. And somehow in the process we are able to amend the bill that is before you. Because it's not taken that what you present is final. This Committee of Parliament may want to either agree or disagree, may amend it in the manner that they want to amend it. And especially now that this bill in fact deals with amendments. Progressive with your local government electoral act, deals with your electoral act, deals with the electoral commission act. All the three acts are being amended in the process. And the point I'm trying to make is that the further submission that is made by the IEC may have came via either the public or via from anyone who may want to have made the submission or the committee itself. Why must it be that we must tell Parliament now that there's this further amendment that if members of the public were to make that submission and say, I propose that on the issue of the addresses, because the bill that we're dealing with currently amends the tribute, why must it be? I'm trying to understand this argument earlier that says that we must take permission from Parliament and having to read that rule. Can you talk to us on that point? Because I was with you and the Deputy Commissioner here. Chairperson. Maybe just talk to us about that point. But I just wanted to have this thing broaden up. Simple to say that members of the public are given the. That's why even the court will always say that you have not given members of the public an opportunity to comment on this matter. Well, how do you give those comments? Because those comments are meant to further make input into the amendments that we are dealing with. why with this one must we go to Parliament and ask Parliament to do this amendment that we want to do to local government electoral act? Talk to us about that.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, this amendment comes after the bill has been introduced to the committee, and after the committee has consulted the interested and affected parties on the provisions of the bill as introduced.
It was supposed to be today that was dealing with the consultation now with the public. Because when you say after the committee has consulted, you mean that the only one who has been back here.
No, I'm simply saying, Chairperson, the bill that you advertised for participation, for public involvement, did not carry this amendment.
Okay, I get your point.
Yes, and secondly, Chairperson, this amendment is quite substantial. It changes the voting procedure in local government. So the entire sector of local government, by this addition, in Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act, when you make this amendment, you would effectively change the regime as it currently pertains. And in the public participation that the committee has conducted thus far, the organized local government has not been consulted on such a pertinent matter. Again, Chairperson, just on the importance of consultation, we have established jurisprudence, legal philosophy as decided by the Constitutional Court on the constitutional obligation to consult interested and effective for Parliament to facilitate public involvement, effective public involvement. The other issue, Chairperson, is that because this amendment gets introduced after the bill has already been published, participated on, as introduced, there is a necessity, so it extends basically the local government municipal electoral act. In Section 47, and therefore, in terms of Rule 286, 4C, which says that the committee, so that's 286, 4C, if the bill amends provisions of legislation, it must, if it intends to propose amendments to other provisions of that legislation, seek permission of the Assembly to do so. So how that rule has been applied to Christian consistently in Parliament is that where there is an introduction or subsequent to the bill being introduced of a provision that's going to substantially affect other legislation, that is going to affect legislation, permission of the House must be sought. It's a procedural aspect which has always been applied in that sense to Christian. The advice was that, given the issue of consultation, given the issue that this now gets introduced after the committee has already published the bill, there has not been any public participation on the provision as proposed, that permission of the House be sought in terms of Rule 286 before the committee can proceed on this.
Now what would be
and also the publication. The publication, Chairperson, could. When the committee receives the permission, then the committee could publicize this provision for public participation in order to comply with that constitutional requirement of facilitating public involvement.
Okay. Now, what would be? Let me hear.
On this amendment, but at the same time look at will it suffice to maybe again look at the NCOP process.
Hello.
That maybe when it goes to the when it goes to the next house, is a bill already that has been passed by the National Assembly. So when it goes to the next house, this amendment may not still be carried. If you had to bring further amendments in the NCOP, it means it must still come back to the National Assembly. 75.
Chair, I think Commissioner
Love
wants to have all of us.
I've noted there. Please, don't read me wrong. Don't read me wrong at all. We are going to do that, and all of us, we know that this bill arrived in the committee very late. It has been lying with the department for ages, and they've not been doing anything that I've really picked up other than what the IC gave them. It came as it is. What delayed this whole bill? Now, Parliament must now be bulldozed now, and we must just run around like headless chickens now that the bill is before Parliament. We're not going to do that thing. If Parliament were to rise in December, the 23rd is going to happen, on Christmas Day, if it's so urgent. You know, because we're not going to bulldoze and run around and do things that are not correct. Now, Commissioner Love, Deputy Chair, firstly, I want us to understand the necessity for this amendment, that further amendments that we're bringing, and therefore the compliance with the law and the rules of the legislature with regard to the introduction of such when a bill has already gone public and there's been public inputs, or even non-inputs general, but it has gone public. May not this amendment, and with the point that we are making that the other key stakeholder here will be partilizing. And again, I want to take it that in that submission as you engage with us, because we relied very much again on the partilizing that has been consulted, you may want again to talk to us about this amendment that you're bringing, that you have again consulted with the partilizing, which in fact gives a effect to some of these amendments that are coming in. Because when you look at the back of the bill, you see parties that were consulted to find that it's all party lines. Now, talk to us about those cases then, and then the consultation, and then the point that is made by legal services of Parliament here to say this matter will have to go back to the National Assembly, because from the principal, a bill that is presented before Parliament and this committee, this amendment was not there. And make a lot of changes in the local government. All right, Commissioner Love?
Chairperson, I think this is something that was canvassed in our earlier meeting. However, if the legal advisor is still minded in the manner that he's talking about, I don't believe that we as the Commission would want the bill to be delayed at all. The urgency overrides this particular proposal. It will come back to you on another occasion. We are about to go into, as you know, provincial and national elections. This was merely to harmonize the local government election. We can deal with that at a later point. It is not correct that it's not the practice. Indeed, it is the practice, but that's an irrelevant issue from the point of view of delaying the bill. So I would propose that we drop the amendment.
Now this amendment that you now propose, that we must now leave them. Is there any effect that will do if we just proceed? I just want to understand that it's not going to create any burdens for you as you prepare for the provincial and
national. Not for the provincial and national election, Chair.
Is it fine that this point can be noted? And again, it does not stop. It does not stop neither yourself and this committee again having maybe passed this thing, this bill to the National Assembly, and this committee may, in fact, as we prepare for local government again, can come back with that amendment. I think working together, because I think that's the spirit in which we are approaching and we've been working. I think we may want to note it and then moving forward, this committee can just on its own, rather than that whole government, I mean, Home Affairs Department process, which is something that we may want to look at maybe for the future purpose of the lines of accountability as a Chapter 9 versus the Parliament and the Department of Home Affairs. I know that Justice with the Public Protector will have that. And then there are not clearly defined, you know, lines of engagement with the Department of Home Affairs other than just being a conduit of your budget and the population register, preparation for the population register. Maybe something that we may want to look at moving forward. On that note, members, can we therefore agree that we'll then proceed with the with amendments that are proposed now, and who's going to be leading us on those? Besides, this is, we want that bill, a bill, right? Because of that we do not receive anything to do with the public submission or the public hearings. We don't have public hearings, there's no submission that came through. Can we therefore agree that we'll then be guided on the clauses that are being amended and we have a deliberation on each one of the lines that are being omitted or the lines that are going to be considered in the clause as they are presented to us? Can you agree on that line? Okay, who's leading us? You might have read on the ABL, what, how we have managed to construct the issues as they were, those amendments as they were presented. Do we have that in place or are we prepared for that?
Chair, can I just indicate there's no ABL yet? Remember, the only reason for an A-list would have been if there was this new amendment.
Okay.
So there's no A-list in this regard.
So it's only with amendments.
The amendment as
who's
the
guiding outcome. Us on those amendments? Can we go clause by clause then on the amendment that's proposed? Huh?
Sorry, Shepard. I'm just saying that in terms of procedures, Dion has explained, there's no A list and therefore committee is going now to clause by clause.
Yeah.
So we can deliberate on each clause. So we can read for the committee the clause for the committee to deliberate on the clauses.
In the draft bill where it's sitting now, we're starting from one there. Is this, am I correct? We don't deal with the bill as it was like proposed earlier, that the electoral amendment bill as to amend the following. The Electoral Act, we don't deal with that. What do you call that? Okay. So we'll start with Clause 1. Clause 1, that's Section 5 of the Electoral Act, number 1996, is hereby amended by substitution of in subsection 1, bracket 1 for paragraph E of the following paragraph. Compile and maintain voters' roll by means of a system of registering of eligible voters by utilizing data. Is that what we are inserting there? We are inserting the word data. Or are you going to guide us on that?
So listen, the words in square brackets and bolded are the words that are being removed, and the ones underlined are the ones that
are those that have been removed.
Yes.
Okay, just take us through then what we'll then do. We'll then come back to now and adopt clause by clause as you are proposing. Just take us through that that whole process again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The bill, as honorable members aware, is the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill.
So we don't do the short title.
B83 of 2018. We do the short title and the long title last year.
Okay.
So we start with the first clause.
Okay.
Amendment to Section 5 of Act 51 of 1996, as amended by Section 94 of Act 117 of 1998. Clause 1. Section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act 1996 is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph E of the following paragraph. E. Compile and maintain voters' roll by means of a system of registering of eligible voters by utilizing available data and information furnished by voters.
Agree? Where
members agree, so this is with a show, then it's the second and then the
Okay. Move into the second.
Adoption of the top clause one.
Okay. Adopted?
Seconded.
Okay. We move to clause two.
Clause two, Chairperson. Amendment of section 15 of the Act 51 of 1996. As amended by Section 26 of Act 34 of 2003. Clause 2, Section 15 of the Electoral Commission Act 1996 is hereby amended by the substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. The Chief Electoral Officer shall, upon application by a party in the prescribed manner and form, accompanied by the items mentioned in subsection 3, register such party in accordance with this chapter.
Can I move for the mover? Mover?
Move, sir.
Umede, seconded? Mamuraputi? Clause 3?
Section 15, capital letter A of the Electoral Commission Act of 1996 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. The Chief Electoral Officer shall, upon application by a party in the prescribed manner and form, and if... Chairperson.
The Chief Electoral Officer shall, upon application by a party in the prescribed manner and form, and if the applicant is...
Covered by the items mentioned in subsection 2, register such party in the
prescribed manner and form. Okay. If you feel like there's an omission anywhere, please come and speak to that. No? Okay. Can I move for the mover?
The part I'm just struggling is, which is, you refer there to, and is accompanied by the items mentioned in subsection 2. Well, I don't know what items those are.
Subsection 2 of the Principal Act. So you need to have a Principal Act with you as you read that.
So it's not subsection 2 as the two above here.
No. Subsection 2 of the Principal Act. All right, let's proceed. Can I get the mover? Mom Kenyon, seconder?
I move for adoption.
Who is the mover?
Mom
Kenyon. And then? Mom Mungomo. Okay, clause 4.
Clause 4,
section 20, yes.
Amend section 20 of Act 51 of 1996. It reads as follows. Section 20 of the Electoral Commission Act of 1996 is hereby amended by the insertion of subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2, capital letter A. The Electoral Court may hear and determine any dispute relating to membership, leadership, constitution, or founding instrument of a registered party. Thank you, Chair.
Remember, this is a point that we said they are not going to have powers to deal with their disputes.
The court.
The court. Okay, can I get the mover? Mamuraputi, seconder?
Mamuraputi, okay.
Seconder? Mamukumen. Mamukomo, thank you. Can we move to clause 5?
Clause 5 inserts section 21, capital letter A in Act 51 of 1996. It reads as follows. The following section is hereby inserted in the Electoral Commission Act of 1996 after section 21. And this is a new clause. Restriction on use of name. 21A. 1. No person may use or trade under a name containing the words Electoral Commission, Independent Electoral Commission, or the acronym IEC, or the translation thereof in any other official language. 2A. Conduct his, her, or its affairs or business, or carry on his, her, on his occupation or trade. B. Be registered or licensed under any law, or C. falsely claim to be acting on behalf of the commission, full stop. Two, no person may, without the prior written act authorization of the commission, represent or make use of their logos, designs, or electoral material used or owned by the commission, full stop. Three, any person who contravenes the provision of subsection 1 or 2 is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 6 months, or both, or to both such fine and imprisonment.
If someone has already painted IEC and registered it, is there such situation that may arise? Someone has registered his IEC, independent electoral commission. What then happened? No, it does happen. I mean, remember Bafana Bafana, there was a situation where Bafana Bafana, they were told that they can't use that name because the name was already taken.
Mm.
Have we checked on that? I see we find that.
I think it will be new chair as opposed
new
to
new.
Old shoes.
Okay,
you
new. Okay, that's fine. Can I get the mover?
Chair, may I just say that I'm satisfied that it's intended for future use. May I just ask, should that clause not say something in that regard? My concern is not so much about, I agree with the principle that no one should use or trade under the names containing the words Independent Electoral Commission. Where I have the problem is with IEC, the words IEC, because that could, there could be another company that's, their acronym is IEC. So now you're passing a law that says you must not, you can't do that any longer. Unless, of course, you indicate some way that says that, you know, the retrospective argument we had earlier.
Chair, I mean, as is customary with the use of legislation, it is something that we wouldn't do retrospectively just because it would fall foul of the law. So it's like any other law. There are provisions, and I know you had that discussion earlier, but I think that that's a very different set of circumstances, as you all pointed out, that there's a constitutional imperative, whereas this is not of the same ilk. But I think we take the guidance of the committee, but I don't think there's a need to say it cannot be applied retrospectively. We wouldn't do it.
Maybe the issue of the acronym, and I think that's the point that Honourable said, maybe it's me. To an extent that the Independent Electoral Commission, I know that is cannot be, as this is what we are trying to legislate. But the acronyms may mean a lot of things. Why do we want to legislate acronyms? Will it a company that, unless if they're involved with similar work that you do, either food education or whatever, and use the material in line with the work that is done by the Independent Electoral Commission, then I'll understand that. But if it's an IEC that got to do with street pole of cutting off trees, it's something else. But how, therefore, do we protect that? But maybe, Commissioner?
Chair, if for the purposes of clarity, if the committee believes that we should add in the context of elections after the words, the acronym IEC, I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah, I think it's true. That is not just blanket, that anyone with IEC will then not use that name anymore. So what do you think will then be in what language will it be?
After the where it says acronym IEC, or translation in the context of elections, so before any other official, before all the translation, you put in the context of elections, or any translation. So the acronym in the context of elections, the acronym in the context of elections, so acronym IEC in the context of elections.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. So I do not wonder that anyone who is doing the IEC and then be found and they'll be arrested, yes, for the conviction.
I move for the adoption of that amendment?
I move the adoption of the amendment.
With the amendment. So you'll then look at the proper what's on
Chairperson, if the words as read out by the commissioner are adopted by the committee, you will simply just go and make the amendment.
That's what I was saying, that you make the necessary amendment. In the clause here, then get the bill that we can adopt it with that amendment, taking it that when the final bill is done, it then comes out with that amendment. Right? To adopt with that amendment. That's the line. Okay.
1 second.
Did I get the mover? Okay, seconded. Okay. That's fine. Can we move to clause 6?
Yes, Chairperson. Clause 6, amend section 7 of 73 of 1998 as amended by section 93 of Act 27 of 2000, section 3 of Act 34 of 2003, and section 3 of Act 18 of 2013. It reads as follows. Section 7 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. A person applying for registration as a voter must do so in the prescribed manner. Thank you, Chair.
The word in the prescribed manner. Can I get the mover? Mover? Clause 7,
Chair, amend section 8 of Act 73 of 1998 as amended by section 4 of Act 34 of 2003 and section 4 of Act 18 of 2013. It reads as follows. Section 8 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. 3. A person's name must be entered in the voter's roll only for a voting district within the ward in which that person is ordinarily resident, provided that where that person is ordinarily resident outside the Republic, his or her name must be entered in a segment of the voter's roll created for that purpose. Thank you, Chair.
Can I get the mover?
I move for adoption.
Thank
you very much. Clause 8. Clause 8, section 11 of Act 73 of 1998 reads as follows. Section 11 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2. The chief electoral officer must record in the voter's roll or in a person's application any change in voting district for which a person is registered as a voter or has applied for registration, if that person's place of ordinary residence after a change in the boundaries of that voting district falls in another ward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can I get a mover?
Move for the adoption of that amendment.
Clause 9, amend section 20 of Act 73 of 1998. It reads as follows. Section 20 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1, capital A. The election timetable may include any other matter authorized in terms of this act. Thank you, Chair. Full stop.
Can I get a mover?
Move.
The election timetable is prescribed in terms of a schedule to the Act. Now there's a pro forma election timetable, but it may be that a situation arises where an additional element must be prescribed in terms of a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And the Commission would have the opportunity using this new provision to include an extra date which is not part of the pro forma timetable.
Mm.
For instance, a date by which all a draft roll is published or something like that. It may not be in the pro forma, but then this will allow for the Commission to regulate that in terms of a time date.
Information about elections.
Correct, yes.
Mm.
Amends Section 24 of Act 73 of 1998. It reads, Section 24 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended. A. By the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. The voter's roll, or the segments of the voter's roll that must be used for an election, are those certified by the Chief Electoral Officer in terms of subsection 2. And B. By the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection, 1 capital letter A, except where this Act otherwise permits, only a voter who applied for registration prior to the proclamation of an election date may vote in the election concerned. Full stop. Thank you, John.
Move on.
Let's
move
on.
Clause 11.
Clause 11. Amend Section 28 of Act 73 of 1998 by substitution. It reads as follows. The following section is hereby substituted for Section 28 of the Electoral Act of 1998. And this substituted clause reads as follows. Non-compliance concerning submission of lists of candidates. 28.1. If a registered party that has submitted a list of candidates has not fully complied with Section 27.2a, B, C, or D, the Chief Electoral Officer must notify that party of its non-compliance. Full stop. 28.2. The notification must be given in the prescribed manner by no later than the relevant date stated in the election timetable, and must indicate that the party has an opportunity to comply with Section 27.2a, B, C, or D by no later than the relevant date stated in the election timetable. 28.3. If a candidate has been nominated by more than one party for an election, A, the Chief Electoral Officer must, where possible, in writing, notify the candidate and such parties who have nominated such a candidate about such state of affairs by no later than the relevant date and time stated in the election timetable. And B, each of the parties to whom notice has been given in terms of paragraph A may, by no later than the relevant date and time stated in the election timetable, substitute such a candidate. For stop. Thank you, sir.
Like now, the DHP being ANC candidate. Yes, sir.
On A.
On A. Where possible in writing.
Notify.
Hmm?
Is it not possible? The deputy.
It's a must.
I think it's a question of the issue of the in writing. You know, sometimes it might not be possible in writing in time. But the person will be notified, not that the person will be here.
Where possible.
Well, this is intended to ensure that you don't have a candidate in party list A, party list B, party list C. Now, it might seem preposterous, but it does happen.
It does happen.
Well, those who are feeling mostly, they know. Okay, can I move for the adoption of clause 11?
Move on.
Mama Raputi, Mama Gomo,
NFP, Sakuri Pegwai.
Before that, I'm saying Mam Kane.
Mam Khalid.
On B also, Chairperson.
On B?
Yeah, I'm concerned about
the
May.
Each of the parties to whom notices.
I'm concerned about the May. I want to get clarity about the letter that talks to May. Is it right to say May?
Or shall. I mean, that's the legal writing now. Well, do you use shall or may? Yes.
So we're using may because a party may say we are fine with our candidate being on the three list if they want to. So you can't make it perennial.
Cannot be instructed.
It's for the party to deal with the issue, and they have an option.
Okay. Thank you. Move. Seconda? Honorable Gumede, seconda. Clause 12?
Clause 12, amend section 38 of Act 73 of 1998, as amended by section 11 of Act 34 of 2003. Section 38 reads as follows. Section 38 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended A, by the deletion of subsection 5A, capital A, and B, by the addition of the following subsections. So the new clause. 8. The Commission may prescribe a different voting procedure for those voters whose names appear on the voter's roll without addresses, provided that if such voter does not comply with the prescribed procedure, he or she may not vote in the provincial elections, but only in the national elections. Full stop.
Okay, we deliberated. I think we discussed this more than twice. Can we move for the mover? No, I'm just saying that we'll get a mover. If there's someone who has an issue, raise your hand. Let's see.
I just want to understand what is the deletion of subsection 5A. What's the consequence of that? We don't have the principal act yet. I'm struggling to frustrate it.
Get a copy of it next to you.
No, we've got this, and we're shooting in the dark here. We can talk.
No, but you must have the copy. We're going to deal with it clause by clause because we have to respect.
So where's the principal act? I don't have it.
So you must have it there. Download it quickly.
I've got it on my phone. I'm clever. I'm very clever, but now, I'm worried about my colleagues on the left hand side. Yeah, I just think I'm going to we're going to be changing the election law. The ANC is finished.
No, I've gone through study groups. They've gone through this thing.
Do we have a copy of the principal act?
I have my copy.
I've seen it before, but before I say yes, I want to look at it now. Just maybe somebody can
see it. They can do this for you. We'll have 15 minutes. And we still have 20. There are 15 dollars remaining. Mamo, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner.
So it says, Section 5 says, if the presiding officer or voting officer is satisfied in respect of all matters mentioned in subsection 3, that officer must, and then the clause that the honourable member is asking about reads, mark the voter's identity document in the prescribed manner.
Now, the issue of the marking of the identity document, what are the...
That's why we're deleting a chair, because not everybody has got the identity document.
So what is going to be the mark now? No more mark now. So there's no way that the person can do twice. So green ID and the new ID is not going to happen. Okay, that's fine. There are those who don't have fingerprints, by the way. They now have fingerprints. Before 1994, there were people who were not taking fingerprints. It was only black people who take fingerprints. I'm sorry to say for saying. Can I get a mover? Can I get a mover? Honorable Gumede, seconded by Honorable Hussein. Okay, let's move to 13.
This clause amends Section 40 of Act 73 of 1998. It reads, Section 40 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. One, if a voter A marks a ballot paper in a way that does not indicate for whom the voter wishes to vote, or B, after having marked the ballot paper, changes his or her mind as to how he or she wishes to vote, and the ballot paper has not yet been placed in the ballot box, the voter may return that ballot paper to the presiding officer or a voting officer. And B, by the addition of the following subsections, 3, the presiding officer or voting officer must then hand a new ballot paper to the voter. 4, the commission must prescribe the number of times a new ballot paper may be issued in terms of subsection 3 with due regard to section 19 of the Constitution. Also, thank you,
Chairperson.
It's like a person going to the booth now and said, I'm voting here, but no, DA is not going to deliver. Let me vote for the NC now, and then go back and change that. Okay, Mamra Putin?
I like even how you have explained it. I move for adoption.
I don't mind, that was only one vote.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was more corruption.
All right, no, thank you very much. Can I get a second? Oh, not second. Okay, why isn't that great? Only because it's one vote. Okay, thank you. Can we move to 14?
This clause amends Section 41 of Act 73 of 1998. It reads, Section 41 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended, A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. Subject to subsection 1, capital letter A, at any time before a voter has been handed a ballot paper, an agent may object to that voter being entitled to vote or to vote at the voting station concerned. B, by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1, capital letter A, where a voter's name appears on the relevant segment of the voter's roll concerned, an objection to that voter in terms of subsection 1 may only be made where A, it is based on the contention that the voter was included on the relevant segment of the voter's roll due to fraud, or B, exceptional circumstances exist which justify the objection being made outside the objection period prescribed in terms of Section 14.2F. C, by the substitution for subsection 3, 4, and 5 of the following subsections. 3, an agent or a voter may object to any conduct other than that mentioned in subsections 1, 1A or 2 of an officer, an agent, or any other person present at a voting station. Also. 4. An objection in terms of subsection 1, 1, capital A, 2 or 3 must be made to the presiding officer in the prescribed manner. 5. The presiding officer in the prescribed manner must, except for an objection in terms of subsection 1A, capital A, decide the objection and notify the objector and any other parties involved in the objection of the decision. And D, by the insertion after subsection 5 of the following subsection, 5, capital A, where an objection is made in terms of subsection 1, capital A, A, the presiding officer must, in the prescribed manner, allow the voter consent to vote, but deal with the vote as if it were a special vote in terms of section 33 or 33, capital A, and B, the matter must be decided by the Commission as if it were an appeal in terms of subsection 6. Full stop. Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Can I get the mover? Mamara Puti, followed by Wabu Kumede. Let's move to 15, amendment of section 6.
Section, clause 15 reads as follows, Chair. Section 86 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. Any juristic person may apply to the Commission in the prescribed manner for accreditation to provide voter education for an election. Full stop. Thank you.
And the person who is not going to use the IUT emblem, or the acronym, unless authorized. Mm. Okay. Can we get the move on?
Chair, okay. may I just raise this? Can I just ask, does this mean that only people who apply to the Commission can conduct voter registration, provide education, voter education?
Come back again, Hossein? I'm
saying that does the consequence of this mean that only people who apply to the Commission
can be accredited to provide voter education.
Yes,
Chair, no, Honourable Member, it means that only a juristic person can be accredited by the IEC, but anybody else can provide voter education. But if so the difference would be accreditation of just individuals rather than organisations, and it's just to ensure that there is a more organised way in which we accredit. But anybody else, as an individual or an organisation, can and does provide voter education.
Can we move to Dambuza Mungomo? Is that right? Can we move to 16?
16 amends Section 87 of the Electoral Act, Chair. It reads, Section 87 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended, A, by the deletion in subsection 1 at the end of paragraph E of the word or, B, by the substitution in subsection 1 of the full stop at the end of paragraph F of a semicolon, and C, by the addition in subsection 1 of the following paragraph, G, use public funds except for the funds allocated to a party in terms of section 5 of the Public Funding of Represented Political Parties Act of 1997 for the purpose of a political campaign. Full stop. Thank you.
So this has nothing to do with the president's campaign or any other campaign.
Okay.
These are very technical, I think. Can we proceed with the move on? Honorable Gumede, Mam Kenya, seconded. Can we proceed to 17?
This clause, Chair, amends Schedule 1 of the Electoral Act. It reads, Schedule 1 of the Electoral Act of 1998 is hereby amended, A, by the insertion after item 1 of the following items. 1, capital letter A, by the Chief Electoral Officer must give notice of the periods during which and the venues where the provisional compiled voters' roll compiled for the election shall be available for inspection in terms of Section 14.1E. Full stop. 1, capital letter B, by day, month, year, by any objection in terms of Section 15 in respect of the provisionally compiled voters' roll for the election must be made. 1C, by the Commission must decide any objection made in terms of Section 15 in respect of the provisionally compiled voters' roll for this election and notify the objection and the Chief Electoral Officer and a person other than the objection whose name or registration details are involved. And B, by the insertion after item 5 of the following item, multiple nominations, 5, capital letter A, 1, the Commission must notify a candidate whose name appears on more than one party list for an election submitted in terms of Section 27 and all the parties on whose party list such candidate appears. 2, if the notified party decides to act in terms of Section 28, 3, that party must do so by... So when the dash is to provide a date, Chairperson. Mm.
Now, this does not address the clause that we dealt with earlier with regard to names that can be presented. That will be the rule of that.
In
that
way,
that is different from that point.
It's
to give the effect to that list of those individuals that are shared more than one. Okay, can I get the move of 17? Honorable Gumede, Mamurafuji, seconded. 18?
18 amends the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act of 2000, Chairperson. It reads, Section 6 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act 2000 is hereby amended, A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. A municipality's segment of the voters' roll to be used in that election is the one certified by the Chief Electoral Officer for that election in terms of subsection 2. And B, by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection, 1, capital A, except where this act otherwise permits, only a voter who applied for registration prior to the proclamation of an election date may vote in the election concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Move on from Gumede and Mamra Putin. Can we go to 2019?
19, amend section 11 of the Municipal Electoral Act. Read, section 11 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act of 2000 is hereby amended by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1, cap letter A. The election timetable may include any other matter authorized in terms of this act. Full stop. Thank you, Chair.
Can we get the mover, Mam Dambuza, Mamu Gomo? Can we go to 20?
Please amend section 51 of the Act of the Electoral Act. This section 51 of the Local Government Electoral Act of 2000 is hereby amended, A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1, subject to subsection 1, capital A, at any time before a voter has been handed a ballot paper, an agent or what candidate may object to that voter being allowed to vote or to vote at the voting station concerned. B, by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection, 1, subletter A, where a voter's name appears on the relevant segment of the voter law concerned, an objection to that voter in terms of subsection 1 may only be made where, A, it is based on the contention that the voter was included on the relevant segment of the voter's roll due to fraud, or B, exceptional circumstances exist which justify the objection being made outside the period of in terms of such of section 11A. C, by the substitution for subsection 3, 4, and 5 of the following subsections. 3, an agent or white candidate or a voter may object to any conduct other than that mentioned in subsection 1 subsection A or 2 of an officer and or any other person present at a voting station. 4, an objection in terms of subsection 1A, 2 or 3 must be made in writing on a prescribed form and handed to the presiding officer concerned. 5, the presiding officer must, except for an objection made in terms of subsection 1 subsection A, summarily investigate the special circumstances underlying the objection and move for that to also direct verbal inquiry to anyone that may be able to assist. G, by the substitution in subsection 6 of the word proceeding paragraph A of the following word. After having investigated the objection, other than an objection in terms of subsection 1, subletter A, the presiding officer must, and E, by the insertion after subsection 6 of the following subsection, 6, subletter A, where an objection is raised in terms of subsection 1, subletter A, the presiding officer must, in the prescribed manner, allow the voter concerned to vote but deal with the vote as if it were a special vote in terms of section 55, and B, the matter must be decided by the commission as soon as it is reasonably practical before declaring the result.
This is in line with the National Electoral Act amendment that we have gone through. Now amending local government electoral act. The same.
Chair, I think that there's a problem with the a typo problem. Under where it's got C by the substitution, and then it's got item number 3, and then go to the next one, section number 4, an objection in terms of subsection 1, and then it's got one small a.
Yeah.
It should be one capital A.
One capital A.
Not the small A.
Oh yeah.
Chair, sorry, just to...
Yeah.
That one must also be in brackets, Chair, if I read it correctly.
One A.
So
it's
one
A
in brackets, one capital
yeah.
A
because
brackets,
it's
yeah.
like the one above in,
okay.
in B.
The line
yeah.
of voting. Thanks,
yeah.
Can we move for the adoption with that amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Adoption?
The one amends section 67 of the Municipal Electoral Act. It reads, section 67 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act of 2000 is hereby amended. A, by the deletion in subsection 1 at the end of paragraph E of the word or, B, by the substitution in subsection 1 for the full stop at the end of paragraph F of a semicolon, and C, by the addition in subsection 1 of the following paragraph, G, use public funds except for funds allocated to a party in terms of section 5 of the Public Funding of Represented Political Parties Act of 1997 for the purpose of a political campaign. Full stop. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let me move up. Mom Damuza.
What for the adoption?
Followed by
Mr.
Ziegler. Is there anything I have, Mr. Ziegler?
Yeah.
Second.
Yeah,
Pagamin.
Yeah, Pagamin. Okay, second.
Okay,
second.
Okay, second. Okay, second.
Disclose amend Schedule 3 of the Municipal Electoral Act, Schedule 3 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act 2000 is hereby amended by the insertion of after item 1 of the following item. 1, capital letter A, by providing the date, month, and year, the chief electoral officer must give notice of the periods during which and the venues where the segments of the provisionally compiled voters roll compiled for the election shall be available for inspection in terms of section 14(1)(e) of the Electoral Act. Full stop. 1, capital letter B, by day, month, and year. Any objections in terms of section 15 of the Electoral Act in respect of the segments of the provisionally compiled voters roll for the election must be made. 1C, by providing the date, month, and year. The Commission must decide any objection made in terms of section 15 of the Electoral Act in respect of the segments of the provisionally compiled voters' roll for this election and notify the objector and the chief electoral officer and a person other than the objector whose name or registration details are involved. Full stop. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I move for the adoption?
Move for adoption.
The first title and the government.
Yes, sir. For the short title and commencement, it reads, this act is called the Electoral Laws Amendment Act 2018 and comes into operation on a date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette.
Is that the point for Momo Rakuzi? Move up. Is that the point you're asking
Momo for money? Oh, no, no, you can't pagamisa. You can't pagamisa.
Chair, on the point of the memorandum on the object, remember now there's been an amendment proposed under clause 5 that the acronym must only not be used, Chair, in any context of an election. Therefore, in the memorandum on the object, we will have to make a slight addition of that provision under clause 5.
How is it going to be? By now, suppose you have to think. How is it going to
be? So, adopt it now. Well, it is under the memorandum on the object, Chair, on page 10 of the bill, under clause 5, 4.5, clause 5. Page 10 of the bill, Chair, clause 5. Yes, Chair.
I was going to amend the memorandum.
Yes, just a slide so that it corresponds with the code. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair. It needs to be added, the issue of the context of an election.
Can I suggest, Chairperson, that what we then do is that we say for the prohibition of the use of the name and its acronym for purposes of election, and then comma, logo, designs, or...
Yes, Chair, you can add that, Chair. With the committee.
It would read, I'll read the whole clause, Chair. Clause 5 inserts a new section 21A into the Electoral Commission Act to provide for the prohibition of the use of the name and its acronym for the purposes of election, logo, designs or electoral material used or owned by the Commission.
That's fine with that amendment, right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
The same wording should go for 10.6 on page 30.
Let's go to
10.6.
10.6.
Yeah, after the, and its acronym.
The amendment also refers to provide for the budget.
Yeah, then after acronym, we'll add the words for the purpose of elections, the same way.
Where's Mbozi? Huh? But why did you bring him here and then you don't want him to speak? Where's John?
Chair?
Yeah, Mbozi.
Chair, there's just one other issue in the on page 13 in terms of the institutions consulted. I think that the second bullet under 9 should read the State Law Office of the State Law Advisor, not of the Chief Justice.
Sorry, just clarity. I think the State Lord, we don't normally indicate that we consulted them because they are part of the process. So we just need to remove it.
So then we just need to
delete
it.
Not parliamentary.
No, no. They are part of the process.
I'm saying that not parliamentary
advisors.
Or State Law
Advisors. State
Law
Advisors.
They are part of the process. We don't delete you, but we'll delete the clause.
Now, partilizing committee, you don't put the names of the parties, generally. You just partilizing committee, as established by the law.
If partilizing committee, a party.
Any further amendments?
The national partilizing.
Any further changes? Can we therefore move the adoption of the entire bill with the amendments that were made? Can I get the move off of the adoption of the old bill?
Chairman, I just say you'll probably be familiar with this, but although we in principle support the content of it, but we would need a mandate from our caucus. So if you don't mind, we would just abstain, but we'd largely support it. Thank you.
So what? Okay, but in principle, we have adopted the bill as a committee. So we're meeting the chairman.
I've given you an in principle indication. So
I'm just saying that you're in the chamber.
We can take one more vote.
Chairperson, I just wanted on behalf of the Commission to appreciate the help that the committee's done in getting this through. Thank you very much.
Members, I think when it comes to the conclusion of the committee, the bill is seconded.
We don't have the second for record.
It's already after 2.
Members, the meeting is not over. Members, I'm on the floor. Can we get, sorry, I'm on the floor, the meeting is not over.
Oh.
Which one is that one? Is that the draft? Okay, the draft that the 5-year handover report, legacy report is being prepared and distributed to members. I've not said thank you very much to all of you. Because I can see you already leaving. I have not said anything. You only said thank you to us. We have not come back to you. The alliance of the EFF and the DA in this house today is giving me problems. It does not, I don't get your attention anymore. I don't get your attention.
But Che, you must understand, you have taken one vote. I need one more.
On that note, colleagues, the distribution of the draft handover report is being distributed to you. Please go through it, make a further addition on that. Next week when we meet, we are going to be meeting to adopt that report. You may want to add more, because I know there have been a lot of things that we may not have covered out of that. But Adam has sent you the soft copy. You may communicate with Adam directly if there's any further inputs that you want to make into the report. By the time it comes to the committee next week, it will be like a final, a sort of a document that it will then require us for discussion and adopting. Let me take this opportunity to thank firstly the Parliament Legal Services for the sterling work and guiding the Portfolio Committee, and together with the Department, having came very late, by the way, because this bill has been with you for quite some time, the Electoral Amendment Bill. But again, to appreciate your contribution in helping the committee to navigate and to find proper meaning of what we're doing here in Parliament. And to the commissioners, the IEC, the CEO, and they call you Juan. I don't know what they call yes. Thank you very much for the engagement Deputy Commissioner, I think you are straightforward with the issues and how you understand the issues. Earlier I was worried when I see you a little bit disturbed about the whole process of the parliamentary process. But inside I was like, she used to be a chair of the committee, understand now the thing. But thank you very much again. We really appreciate the... It's just a matter now of making sure that the National Assembly adopts this amendment. And then the SOP then gets involved in the process. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.